My name is Mitch Hunter. I'm a PhD candidate at Penn State University, and I'll be speaking about cover crops and drought implications for climate resilience. First, I'd just like to acknowledge people who've helped me along the way, primarily my advisor, Dr. Dave Mortensen, as well as a whole bunch of people who helped out in the field over multiple years and really made this possible, especially Dr. Denise Finney, who started out as a fellow grad student at Penn State and is now at Ursinus College, actually, and funders at USDA and the National Science Foundation. So I think we're all aware of the issues surrounding climate change and cropping systems, and many people are looking at cover crops as a potential climate adaptation tool. And one way that we know that cover crops can be beneficial is through protecting the soil in the face of extreme rainfall events. So these are projected to become more severe, and cover crops have a high potential to help hold soil in place during extreme rainfall. However, cover crops have also been credited with buffering cash crop systems against drought stress. I think this really came to the fore after the 2012 drought year in the Midwest, when the SARE survey showed that yields were higher following cover cropping. And then this has been promulgated throughout the discussion online and in the press. But I think there's still a lot of, and of course we know that drought is projected to become more frequent and more severe under climate change. So looking at the Northeast region where I work, short-term droughts lasting between 1 and 3 months are projected to become about twice as common by the end of this century as they were at the end of last century. But there are some unanswered questions about cover crops as a drought adaptation tool. So the first one is simply, do cover crops actually reduce yield losses from drought? And if they do, which cover crop species or cover crop traits are most effective at doing that? And then finally, can the benefits of cover cropping for drought adaptation be seen in the short term or only after multiple years of cover cropping? So to think about this, I started to think about the ways that cover crops could either ameliorate or exacerbate drought stress. So in the short term, cover crops can transpire soil water in the spring. This is especially a concern in western, drier areas of the United States. Cover crops can also mineralize or immobilize nutrients that will affect the growth of the cash crop under drought. They can reduce evaporation and runoff, especially when mulches are conserved on the soil surface. And finally, cover crops can capture snow over the winter, which can increase snowmelt in the spring and water availability in the spring. In the longer term, cover crops have the potential to increase soil water holding capacity. And we heard a really interesting talk in this session earlier today from Dan Kane looking at the ability of cover crops to increase soil organic carbon. They also can help improve soil structure. So we might be able to store more soil water following cover cropping in the long term. And we also might increase the soil infiltration rate and therefore be capturing more water as well. Today I'll only be talking about the first two short-term effects, spring transpiration and nutrient dynamics, given the nature of my field experiment. So the hypotheses that I'll be looking at today are first that cover crop transpiration reduces plant available water and increases maize drought stress unless spring rains recharge the soil profile. So given that I'm working in a humid region, Pennsylvania, we thought it was quite likely that spring rains would be sufficient to recharge the profile, although we recognize that that is not the case everywhere, so we thought we'd look at that as well. And then the second larger hypothesis is that low carbon to nitrogen ratio cover crops will decrease drought stress, while high carbon to nitrogen ratio cover crops will increase drought stress. And I want to walk through the mechanisms behind this kind of one by one. So first, very simply, low carbon to nitrogen ratio cover crops will mineralize nitrogen in the soil. So here we see kind of representing a clover cover crop and high levels of soil nitrogen at corn planting. And then in contrast, high carbon to nitrogen ratio cover crops such as grasses, for instance cereal rye, will immobilize nitrogen in the soil. So there'll be less nitrogen availability for the growing corn. Second, we hypothesize that nitrogen limitation will then be exacerbated by soil water limitation. So here we see a high carbon to nitrogen ratio cover crop with limited nitrogen for the following maize crop, and yet this plant is relatively healthy. In contrast to, looks like my figure is a little bit off right here, but in contrast to a maize crop or a maize plant growing under drought conditions, which I'm signifying with the a little graphic of a rainout shelter covering that maize plant, which if you could see the graphic, you would see it's shorter and also less green, so that nitrogen limitation from the cover crop is being exacerbated by soil water limitation. Third, we see that high nitrogen, we hypothesize that high nitrogen supply will increase canopy size and therefore radiation capture. And so on the left, following a clover cover crop, for instance, we see a larger canopy, and on the right, again, the figure is missing, but you see a smaller canopy following a high carbon to nitrogen ratio cover crop. So you're going to see a difference in radiation capture, which of course is important for plant growth. And then finally, based on findings in the literature, we also expect that high nitrogen supply will increase gas exchange under water stress. So gas exchange or photosynthesis, stomatal conductance, have been shown to be higher for high nitrogen status plants than for low nitrogen status plants. And it's no surprise or no secret that adding nitrogen to a cropping system is going to give you a better response, give you more yield, especially a system that with a high nitrogen demand or where nitrogen is limiting. So simply showing better yields following a nitrogen supplying cover crop doesn't tell us a lot about the ability of that cover crop to really buffer against the drought stress. So I wanted to think through some potential responses to nitrogen that will help us think about whether we're seeing a buffering response. And so what I'm showing here is just the response of maize grown under ambient conditions to nitrogen status. And of course, at a higher nitrogen status, you get more yield, more leaf area index, that sort of thing. And so one potential response under the shelter, under drought conditions, would be no response, in which case the water stress would be operating as a complete limiting factor. But it's probably more likely that we would see some kind of co-limitation, where under drought conditions, the maize is still able to respond to nitrogen, it just doesn't respond as strongly as under ambient conditions where there's ample water. And then finally, we might see a buffering response, where the addition or the increase in nitrogen status actually makes up for some of the water stress, and the high nitrogen status maize that's experiencing drought actually performs pretty similar to the maize grown under ambient conditions. So I'll come back to these different potential responses later on as we're looking at some of the results. We tested these hypotheses using rainout shelters that we designed and built and placed in the field. You can see that as we placed them in the field when the corn was young, they were on 5-foot legs, and then as the corn grew, we raised them up to having 10-foot legs. And in each case, next to the rainout shelters, we had an ambient plot that we used for comparison. We did this in the maize following 5 different cover crop treatments, so a tilled fallow, a red clover, cereal rye, forage radish, and then a 3-species mixture that included red clover, cereal rye, and also Austrian winter pea. And that was designed to optimize nitrogen management preceding a maize crop. We also did this in the context of an organic dairy feed rotation with a randomized complete block design where we grew maize silage, soybean, and winter wheat with cover crops following the maize and following the wheat. And today I'll be entirely focusing on the phase following the cover crops following wheat going into maize silage. This is also a full tillage system given that it is organic. And we applied 45 megagrams per hectare of manure, which may seem, at cover crop termination, which may seem like a large or a high rate of manure, but in fact, this was only really enough to meet the maize crop's phosphorus demand, and so it might have been a little short on nitrogen. The field layout was that we had this large distributed field experiment, and we placed the shelters within it, and as I said, next to each shelter, there was an ambient plot. So as you go into the bulk corn, each of these subplots, the shelter and the ambient plots, covered 4 rows of corn. They were each about 3 meters by 3 meters. And then we only sampled within the middle 2 rows. So this was designed to ensure that the maize plants we were sampling were really experiencing the drought treatment that we were trying to impose, given the potential edge effects on that shelter. For the crop management timeline, we planted those cover crops in August following wheat termination, and then they grew over the winter up until early May, at which point we tilled them in, and the field was then left fallow and worked down until late May or early June when we planted the maize. That maize grew normally until early to mid-July, at which point we applied the rainout shelters only to the shelter plots. And then the maize in those shelter plots grew for the rest of the season under the shelters. They were applied continuously until maize silage maturity, at which point we harvested the whole plants. To get to my results, first, the cover crop biomass. And I'm just going to say now that we had these five treatments, and I'm only going to really speak about the fallow, the clover, and the rye. Fallow being our control, and the clover and the rye giving us the two endpoints of our response. I'll show you the data for radish and the three species nitrogen, but I don't have time to go into it. So if those are treatments you're interested in, you'll have to just take a look yourself. So for cover crop biomass, in the fall, we saw that we got a good amount of both clover and rye biomass, with rye yielding higher. Similar story in the spring. So going into the maize, we terminated and tilled in quite a large amount of high carbon to nitrogen ratio rye biomass, and a substantial amount as well of low carbon to nitrogen ratio clover biomass. And to our first hypothesis, we did not see a cover crop effect on spring soil moisture. So looking at volumetric water content at 20 centimeter depth, there's no difference between the fallow and any or all of the cover crop treatments in either year, and we attribute this to the occurrence of regular spring rains that just replenished the water that was transpired by the cover crops. Moving now into the maize phase of the system, I just want to let you know that the shelters were effective at reducing soil volumetric water content. So we have 2014 and 2015. Starting at the 40 centimeter depth, you can see that the soils were drier under the shelter treatments than in the ambient conditions. And the same response was seen at the 20 centimeter and 10 centimeter depths. And we can see at those higher depths much more responsiveness to the rain events that occurred throughout the season in the shelter, in the ambient plots, but not in the shelters. So to our first mechanistic hypothesis about the effects of nitrogen dynamics on maize response to drought, we did see that cover crop residues created large differences in soil nitrogen. So following termination and manure application, inorganic nitrogen leapt up in the soil and was highest under the clover treatment, intermediate for the fallow treatment, and lowest for the rye. And the same pattern was seen, in fact, even more strongly in 2015. So we were setting up this gradient of nitrogen availability. For the second hypothesis, we did see that water limitation exacerbated nitrogen limitation. So to walk through this, the fallow and clover plots were similar as far as leaf greenness. So this was taken with a Minolta SPAD meter, which measures the greenness of the leaf as a proxy for chlorophyll content and for nitrogen status. However, the rye treatment was significantly lower in the ambient conditions. And then when we layer on the effects of the shelters, we can see that water limitation reduced leaf greenness and nitrogen status even further. Going on to the next hypothesis, looking at cover crop end supply and radiation capture, I'm going to be using a measure known as leaf area duration. So it's essentially the area under the curve of the leaf area index measurement over time. And what we did see is that nitrogen supply did enhance radiation capture as measured by leaf area duration. So clover was a bit higher than fallow, rye was substantially lower. These are in the ambient conditions. And under the drought conditions in the shelters, we saw quite a significant reduction in leaf area duration across the board, regardless of the nitrogen, of the cover crop treatment and its effects on nitrogen availability. Now, when we place this on the basis in response to nitrogen status, we start to see some interesting patterns. So again, we see that nitrogen status measured with the SPAD meter, it does drive leaf area duration. So at higher nitrogen status, you have higher leaf area duration. This is true for both the ambient and the shelter treatments, but you can see the response is stronger under ambient conditions than it is under the shelter. And so what we're seeing here is co-limitation of resource capture. So the canopy is out there capturing the resource of radiation, and the development of that canopy is limited both by nitrogen supply and by water supply, which makes sense because physiologically both of those two factors have the same effect. The most immediate effect of water deficit or nitrogen deficit is to reduce the expansion of tissues, especially leaf tissues. So it makes sense that they will both be limiting leaf area duration in this case. Now, to go to the final mechanistic hypothesis, we saw that high nitrogen status, again, supported greater stomatal conductance, an indication of photosynthesis or gas exchange. But here we see a different pattern of the response, where in the ambient conditions, there really was no response to greater nitrogen status, whereas under the shelter conditions, we saw a positive response. The difference in that interaction is only marginally significant, but it does appear that in the shelters, having greater nitrogen status enabled those plants to photosynthesize or maintain a stomatal conductance much more similar to those under the ambient conditions. And so in contrast to the resource capture, what we're seeing is that buffering effect going on with resource use efficiency. The ability or stomatal conductance is a good indication of water status, and given that radiation is falling on those leaves, giving the potential for photosynthesis, that resource is being captured, the fact that those stomates are able to be open suggests that that resource can be used efficiently. So where we saw co-limitation of resource capture, we're seeing buffering of resource use efficiency. So those are all our mechanistic hypotheses. What happens when we put it all together and look at the total maize yield? Well, in general, we saw that the maize yield reflected the main effects that you'd expect from nitrogen status and drought. Fallow and clover were not different the first year in the ambient conditions. Rye was lower, and then the effect of the shelter was to reduce maize yield across the board. In 2015, the yields were higher in general. We saw that it appeared that there was a more of a response to the clover treatment, a large drop relative to fallow and the rye treatment, and again, the shelter treatments or the shelter effect significantly reduced maize yields. And both the shelter effect and the cover crop treatment were significant in a mixed model. So now looking at this as a response to nitrogen status, we can kind of decide overall whether we're seeing a buffering effect or a co-limitation effect. And what we see is a consistent pattern across the years, although yields were higher in 2015. In both cases, not surprisingly, maize yield was responsive to nitrogen status, but we saw a stronger response in the ambient conditions and under the shelters, and that difference was significant. And so overall, I think what we're seeing is a co-limitation of yield, which leads me to the conclusion that, in general, the co-limitation of resource capture that we saw with the leaf area duration was more powerful in its effect on the final maize performance than the buffering that we saw on the resource use efficiency as far as stomatal conductance. So for further conclusions, this also makes me think that it's unlikely that cover crops actively buffer against drought stress through nutrient supply. We're likely to see a response to cover crop nitrogen, but it's not necessarily going to allow us to overcome water stress from drought, even though it may be doing so with respect to a certain ecophysiological measures. And so this means that it's critical to avoid cover crop-induced nitrogen deficiency. These sorts of deficiencies are probably most common in an organic system like what I was working in, where it's more difficult to replace or to account for nitrogen deficit due to immobilization. But they can also occur in conventional systems, and I think they really point to the need to ensure that we don't allow our cover crops to get too large and have too high of a carbon-to-nitrogen ratio, because that can lead to nitrogen immobilization and might actually exacerbate drought stress. For management implications, they're pretty straightforward. I think we can say to farmers that nitrogen provision in cover crops are going to be optimal under both normal rainfall conditions and drought conditions. So I think this means that you don't need to change up your nitrogen strategy in anticipation of drought, and you're also not likely to get a big yield hit in a drought year simply because you used a cover cropping treatment that works well in a normal year. Thank you. I'll take any questions.
Questions for Mitch?
Yes.
Don't you think that the shelter might create the microclimate as far as air temperature, soil temperature that is different from the ambient conditions?
Yes, that's always a risk with these kinds of experiments. And we did this basically on a shoestring, so we weren't able to use the nice automated roofs that extend and retract based on precipitation. But we did measure some of those microclimate factors that you mentioned, and we didn't see any differences in canopy temperature. And we also, saw a relatively minor reduction in radiation from the greenhouse plastic that was on the roofs. The one thing that did show some differences was pre-dawn canopy temperature was slightly higher in the shelters. I don't doubt that there was some effect from those microclimate changes, but I think these results are very consistent with more straightforward, water and nitrogen responses that have been studied using irrigation and mineral fertilizers. So I think the responses that we're seeing are probably mostly due to the cover crop treatments and the drought treatment. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on how that differs from mineral fertilizer?
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, the question is how might these responses differ from mineral fertilizer?
The question being, could you mitigate your drought stress problems with introductory by saving the water and soil profile then applying mineral nitrogen instead, making sure that the end balance is good and that would kind of help your crop get through the drought?
Right. That's a good question. I guess I would say that probably in a typical mineral fertilizer-based management system, if anything in a drought, you'll have excess nitrogen because you won't have the plant uptake. So nitrogen availability or nitrogen status is highly influenced by the amount that the plant is taking up out of the soil. So additional nitrogen application doesn't seem likely to be an important adaptive strategy for drought response. I would say that I don't have any evidence here that this response is in any way unique to organic sources of nitrogen or cover crop based sources of nitrogen. All I'm seeing is that with these different cover crop treatments, we're able to drive a gradient in nitrogen availability. The one potential way that it could be beneficial is through synchrony of nitrogen release. There's some indications that as cover crop residues decompose, they release the nitrogen more in sync with corn crop needs, but that's also very difficult to make happen and to manage. Anyone else?
Thank you, Mitch. A big applause for Mitch.